Ms. Parkinson Real Tone. How long were you doing this work with the friends at Belsen then?
Well, our team was pulled out of Belsen after a very few weeks. It was rather sad because we heard a rumour that not all the teams were going to be left in Belsen. And so we asked our team leader to approach the task at doing and say, please, don't pull us out. We're just beginning to do the rehabilitation work with the people who came out of the camp. And in a way that can happen, we were the one team that was pulled out. We were sent to a transit camp in Sweden, where one of the students don't need help. When we reported to the major at this transit camp, he looked in amazement at us and said, "Where have you come?" He said, "Well, we were told that we were desperately needed here." He said, "Well, I didn't ask for a civilian relief team, I asked for a sanitation squad." So he said, "Well, while we're here, we'll do a sanitation squad and whatever else is needed." And this was a camp where foreign workers were being assembled from all parts of Germany to be deported back to France, Belgium, Holland, and all the Western European countries from the work camps in the German area. And the people who came through had obviously been looting labor crew and were carrying all types of stuff with them. And in order to get the maximum number of people on each train, the plans that we had issued an edict that only one of these luggage was to be taken on the train to get back to France or London. And the rest had to be taken. And there was a big enclosed area in the centre of the camp where the people were instructed to come and dump their goods that they weren't going to take them in the other place. And this camp had been running for about 6 weeks. And the conditions were pretty poor. And during that 6 weeks, in order to prevent the people from taking back the goods that they want and taking them on the train, the army had been burning everything. Except for these outposts, and so on, been burning. It was appalling to think of the destruction of these things and the need that was around. And so, the first thing we said was, when there were two people, two of the men went on the sanitation job to try and clear up what they could. And most of the rest of us said, "Well, look, can't we work on at least salvaging some of these desperately important things?" So they gave us a plan, and we collected all the things that were being dumped and sorted them out. And we had only 3 days in which we could do that, which is after 3 days they closed the camp. But in that 3 days we had salvaged at least 150 blankets. And they think that they must have been burning in that 50 blankets a day for 6 weeks to do that. And mine bombers, and we salvaged other sorts of other things. The army of the uniform, I think it was a general's uniform, masses of pencils, paper, children's clothes, other sorts of things. And fortunately, we were able to salvage 3 days of this, and we were able to send this along back to the Western Soviet, and some of it on to a special camp at Union where our Jewish men were staying, where they lived with the Jews, and they were trying to set up little schools and things in the camps. And the pencils and paper and notebooks and anything that we could send them was absolutely wonderful to the good work they were able to do. Well, then we were putting our heels for 2 weeks at Cleveland, waiting to know what is supposed to be the next job.
Was the camp at Sulingen then for displaced persons in transit?
It was, I can't remember what the actual buildings were. Yes, it was definitely a point at which all these people were being assembled back from work in Germany, back to France and so on. So they had been forcibly taken as workers to factories in Germany, and then after they left to their own countries, it was an assembly point to be taken back to their own countries. They weren't displaced in the sense that later we were working for displaced persons, in that they assumed that they had somewhere to go to, so they were going back to a home to survey from, and the assumption they'd still be going about there, of course. But they were all nationalities except actually the Germans. But they were mostly French, Dutch, Belgian. All the countries on the western end of Europe.
So we're talking about the summer of 1945, are we now? Mm-hmm. Sorry, I interrupted you with you saying how you were about to leave Sulingen.
Well, the major who was in charge of Sulingen camp was then given his moving orders to go to Brunswick and work in military government there with displaced persons. He'd made a good contact with our team, and of course surprised himself because he didn't imagine that countries were going to be much good. And I think he changed his mind and he found that we were all hard workers and prepared to turn our hand to anything. And so he said, I'd like you to come with me and work in Brunswick for our next work. And we moved with him. And generally there, appointed to work with displaced persons in Brunswick.
In any particular camp?
Yes. Eventually, we were put in charge of a very large camp with displaced persons, particularly. We'd been helping to assemble the people from all over the Atlantic area, because at that time Polish workers were scattered in different apartments and camps and places, in small groups and large groups. And in the early weeks, it was a question of local civilians were finding out where all these groups were, and they were being brought into big, larger camps. And everyone I had at work in the camp area for two or three weeks, which had been, I think, occupied by, I can't remember rightly, in Russian prisoners of war, I think. And eventually it was turned into a Polish camp.
Perhaps we should say that the Errol you mentioned is Errol Hall Williams.
Hall Williams, yes. And he and I worked in this camp area for several weeks, and it was quite an interesting experience. We were very impressed by the, some of the Polish people who were there were very lively and quick to take advantage of every opportunity of building the community up. Not everybody was as quick as that, but they did at least as soon as they could set up a nursery school, and they built a chapel. And I remember rightly, they decorated the chapel very beautifully with hammered out skins. They had a beautiful real boss, which looked beautiful from the back, and it was all fattened, rich meat skins. It was amazing what they had done. And we were very lucky because we discovered in the forest behind this barracks, it's a munition factory. And eventually we got into this munition factory and had a wonderful time trying to salvage the kind of things that were there for possible reuse. And we got all sorts of things such as munition bags, I think it took about 5 diminution bags to make a dress for a small child. And we had dresses that had been used for cleaning quality and dinners. So we had some of the dresses that had the bits of fat and some of the beads of the dress that we then learned the bag. And we had to unscrew these dresses, and they made
How do you spell Lehre?
L-E-H-R-E.
What were the relations of the Polish displaced persons with the local Germans? Was this in the British zone?
Yes.
Any other memories from Lehre?
I think it was in Lehre, but we had a mass bombing when a large number of the Polish couples were teamed up and lived together. That had been forbidden to marry. The Nazis had been around in Canada, but they had been in stable cohabitation for a long time. But now they had been delighted to be able to regularize the situation. The first priest married, I think it was about 25 at once, 25 couples. And there they were with their children, and many of the children were dressed in the uses and dresses that were made from their munition sets. It was quite a great occasion.
Were there Polish Jews mixed in amongst the Polish DPs?
I don't remember that they were.
Were things by this time beginning to improve in Germany, or were material conditions just as bad?
Just as bad. But we didn't see much of peace. So the silly thing is, you didn't get an impression of what was happening in Germany as a whole, because we were still concentrated on the camp. Later, we were given the, I think Quakers were asked to take over the administration of the camp that was set up on the Droitzimmer airfield outside Brunswick, which was a very big ex-German Air Force base, and we were put in charge. And our leader at that time was Hugh Jenkins, and he became the commander in the camp, which then had to be renamed itself. And we were working all out trying to organize services in the camp, putting on a proper footing. And I don't remember that I walked into the town of Brunswick, which was only a few miles away, once in daylight, in 3 weeks. So quite honestly, we became rather disconnected from the conditions in Germany. because in my home, we were just forced to go to work within this camp, which is what I was in Poland.
How did you get the name Gypsy?
I don't know. I think the Americans have been calling it Gypsy. We went to go to the when the state of Gypsy, and we thought, before we got there.
Did you have anything to do with Gypsy or Romani people?
No, not at all.
And after Lehrer?
This Lehrer was only for a few weeks, and then it was removed. I don't know what the other members of the team were doing, but there's a description in there that Errol does about that time in Lehrer. And I got quite a bit of my letters home as well. And then we all moved and reorganised together. Previously, the other members of the team had been doing all sorts of different things in Brunswick and this, handling the pearls and so on. But then they became a joint team again, working in the Gypsy camp on the boats in an airfield.
What happened next?
We were there for a very long time. We managed to set up a lot of quite good welfare services, but we were very dependent on stores and shipments of the things that came in through the Red Cross and other welfare agencies. And it was quite difficult to make the appropriate use of what was there because the stores were so minimal and in the need. The camp was organised in blocks. Each block had a Polish, it was a Polish camp. They put Polish displaced persons together in that camp. We had a certain number of German maintenance workers doing the actual maintenance in the camp. And each block was organised under a Polish block leader. Most of them had been concentration camp victims. And one of the problems always was that when matters was reached a crisis point, quite suddenly all the ex-concentration camp people would reappear in their concentration camp striped garments that looked like pajamas. And we knew there was trouble brewing because they were then going to make a fuss. We had a good many different sort of crises, particularly over stores and things like Red Cross parcels in the end. And that was a great relief when some Red Cross parcels started arriving. But there were problems over black marketing of the goods. And in the end, we had to split up the parcels and not give out the parcels as a whole. And that caused a lot of ill feeling in the camp.
It seems extraordinary that they should use their striped pyjama uniform, as it were, in that way.
Well, they almost regarded themselves as the aristocracy of the camp. They were the people who had suffered most. They were the people who were trying to be listened to. And, yes, it all appeared. Not a bit like, I suppose, when you come to think of it. It's like the first Peters in Australia, the early convicts, and now the aristocracy of Australia. Well, it's much longer since then, but you know what had once been a reason for shame and became a reason for pride.
Can you take me a bit further, please?
I was allocated, it's really rather funny when you come to think of it, to go back to the beginning of putting our team together. In England, we had put up a team which had among its members one trained nurse and three social workers. And then the powers that be said they wanted teams with two nurses and two social workers. So the powers that be said, all right, And then our teenager came round and said, look, one of your three social workers is going to be a nurse. What's your nursing experience? So we looked at each other and I said, well, I've got elementary first aid and home nursing certificates from the Red Cross. Right, you're going to be assistant nurse. So I said, well, can't send me abroad with the experience I've got, so please, while we're waiting, can I get some experience? And he said, right, they said, okay, we'll send you to Hackney Outpatients Department. And I went to Hackney Outpatients Department in Hackney Hospital, where there was already a trainee girl from the Burns Ambulance Unit. And I worked in the Outpatients Department there, gathering whatever information I could that was going to help me as a nominal nurse. So when it got to the camp, in the Gypsy camp, Hugh said, look, I think you're going to have to be the liaison officer for the medical side, which didn't mean that I had to use any medical experience, because we had a young doctor who was allocated to the camp and two trained nurses, and we ran a clinic, an outpatients department within the camp. So in fact, I didn't really need to have medical knowledge, but I was in this administration. And I had to see to it that we got them as far as we could and that things were moving as satisfactorily as possible. And in spite of the fact that my medical knowledge as such was very limited, it was perfectly possible to use my administrative abilities such as they were and use the medical expertise to the trained people who were there. We had a great deal of problems with abortions, particularly 9 months after the end of the war. There was a great rash of pregnancies starting on that night that year, and a lot of abortions were happening in the camp. And one of my experiences is that the doctor said to me, I believe there's an abortionist in Brunswick, and that some of our girls are going to her, and we've got to find who she is. Can you help me? And so I did. I managed to extract an address from one of the girls who'd had an abortion. And we went down, and I went in first to ascertain if the woman was there, and she was there. And the doctor came back, I think, with a member of the local police, and we searched her flat, and we found implements that she'd used in abortions hidden in the stove. And she was subsequently taken to court, and I don't remember what sentence she had. I was not taken in as a witness, but they certainly caught her. I don't know how many others were happening all the time. We also had one or two deaths in the camp from illicit brewing of alcohol. The Pearls are great drinkers. Anything that would ferment could be used for brewing up alcohol. So we discovered that little illicit stills were being set up in people's rooms. The camp was on a barracks, as you said, there were quite a lot of large rooms. And we had to do a search down the camp in order to find the illicit stills. And we thought we would destroy them. It was a difficulty because they were quite hard to find sometimes. But it was a big problem.
From the health point of view, or because it was breaching excise as well.
It's terribly dangerous stuff. If you breathe in a bit of stuff, it can cause blindness and death if it's a bit improperly made. And we did have one death in one case of blindness when I was there. But we tried to find the man in the stairs. On the whole, the atmosphere was pretty good. They accepted in our administration of the camp with remarkable friendliness, really. the rock leaders didn't want to make decisions that would make them unpopular with the people concerned. For instance, when we had supplies sent in, and there was only a limited amount, and we had to choose priority groups to receive whatever it was. And we asked the rock leaders for their opinion, and they kept wanting to put the decisions back to us, so that they could prove the big loans for everything unpopular. We had all sorts of decisions to make, something like what government mothers and tiny children have got power to, and so on. One of the things we had was a concern to live in war, and that essentially is to mothers with small children. It was very little needed. And so there were times where we were going back to the States to live in. Of course, your time to live on writing these folks, one was a bit of a fraud, but it comes up hard and thick. And I had a great disappointment that talking answers of living there wouldn't make a dumper if you were living on writing these folks. So then eventually, little readers were managed to be found, they had gone and picked all the living that the people were doing, and we looked upon these people living readers. One of the other things I remember was that sacks were being unpicked, because in one direction they had quite strong fibre, and the other direction was painful, you know, working up. And some of that could be unpicked and turned into a little bit of these potatoes. Some sort of sacks, anyway, and they could be unpicked and utilised again. And one of the other things that the Poles were very good at was making sandals out of the dried leaves of sweet corn. You know, and they could be cutted into sort of, like sandals, and it wasn't work.
Was it here that you met this German whom you were telling me about earlier, who was a Nazi?
Well, he wasn't actually a member of the Nazi Party. He was the doctor in the camp. And he wasn't actually a Nazi, because he was in the Wehrmacht officially. I think he'd been put in the Wehrmacht, and I think he'd been trained as a Wehrmacht officer. In his medical service. So he wasn't actually a member of the Nazi Party, but he certainly brought up in all the atmosphere of the Nazi youth movement, and very much imbued with Nazi ideas. And he found that there were only two to come to terms with, and he quoted a team with a pacifist background, because he, as a student, had apparently the thought of and he said that his existence to the powers that be, and obviously was not to obey orders, and the ones who gave the orders to the other.
Were you personally friendly with him, or?
Yes, I was the member of the team who had most to do with him. So I invited him over to one of these team meetings, and our folk were quite pleased to talk to him. And he could over some of the ideas that were floated in the room to him.